for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. More than half of Americans now stream movies and TV shows over the internet every month. Some cable companies are responding by offering consumers more choice. On Tuesday, Verizon announced a new TV package that lets customers choose the channels they want. And as broadband internet access becomes more crucial, government officials signal they might not approve the Comcast-Time Warner merger. Here to talk about the shift to internet TV and how cable companies are responding, Cecilia Kong of The Washington Post and Andrew Lee of American University's School of Communications. Joining me from New York City, David Folkenflik of NPR. I'm sure many of you are in the midst of perhaps experiencing some of these changes. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. And welcome to all of you.
Hello, Diane.
Good to be with you.
Thanks so much.
Cecilia Kong, I'll start with you. I know the Justice Department and FCC officials met with Comcast executives yesterday. What came out of that meeting that we know?
So there's a lot we do not know, but there are some things we do know that are important facets in understanding where the government might stand today with its decision on the merger. Comcast did have marathon meetings with both the Federal Communications Commission and the Justice Department. The Justice Department wanted to determine whether the deal was approvable or worth approving with conditions. In other words, were there some consents or some conditions that would make this deal justifiable from a legal point of view? The FCC, according to the Wall Street Journal, has recommended after that meeting to send this review of the merger with Time Warner Cable to an administrative judge. And that's significant, Diane, in that the Federal Communications Commission has only done that rarely in the past. They did that with AT&T's bid for T-Mobile, only in the cases where they actually are not in favor of the mergers. And in the case of AT&T T-Mobile, the Justice Department also sued against that merger. So these are negative signs for Comcast. That said, Comcast, of course, has said these were routine meetings, among many meetings over the course of 14 months. But the landscape really has changed within the broadband and TV industry, as you know, Diane, over the last 14 months since Comcast and Time Warner proposed their deal. And what the Justice Department and the Federal Communications Commission is trying to do is to determine now, what does it mean for these two big internet and cable companies to merge when a lot of what's going to happen even months ahead are unknown? And to determine whether Comcast actually made good on some of its promises in its previous merger with NBC Universal.
So what happens next?
What happens next is, well, Comcast has said, and it still says, that it believes that the merger will not be determined, the review won't be determined until the middle of this year. So they say June and July. A lot of this is trying to figure out what's going on in that black box of, you know, in the Justice Department and the Federal Communications Commission. There will be a lot of noise by people who don't like the deal, consumer groups. A lot of people don't like the deal, as well as competitors such as Netflix, Discovery Communications. A lot of other broadband providers are concerned about the deal. So we'll have to see from Comcast whether they will continue to proceed and say anything about the deal, as well as what the officials say.
And to you, David Folkenflik, just what is the Justice Department most concerned about at this point?
Well, we consider these, rightly, two giant
cable providers merging together, the nation's leading television cable provider, Comcast, essentially absorbing, taking over Time Warner Cable, itself a spinoff of a much larger Time Warner conglomerate in earlier years. But actually, I think a lot of people think about this as the nation's two leading broadband internet providers. And, you know, those are the streams through which information flow in this country to consumers and to a lot of businesses as well. And they control, Comcast is the nation's largest broadband provider already, but together it will be the clear plurality of people would get their cable. They have to pay to get cable through that. Now, there are other ways to go around it. There are some alternatives, but that's the way the landscape currently looks. And so you're seeing these two major, important, powerful industries being dominated by a single company to such a greater extent than even currently. That's an incredible amount of consolidation. So, you know, the Justice Department starts out and says, is there any grounds on which we should be considering blocking this? But you're seeing at least tonally a shift to, is there any reason we should really let this go through? Should it be on conditions or should it not be at all?
And to you, Andrew Lee, Comcast and other cable companies seem to be recognizing that growing number of people are leaving cable altogether, streaming TV, streaming movies online. Do we know just how many people are actually doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Cecilia, covering this industry, has the exact numbers on this, but I think the argument that you see from Comcast and from Time Warner's to say that we don't have overlapping markets, therefore, if we combine our companies, we are not reducing choice by people out there. While technically true, I think you really still have to be very concerned about the massive power of a company that has that many households, that much programming under their control, and basically they would have a lot more influence as a combined powerhouse in this area. There are still lots of people. I mean, it's still very important to note that although we have great things like Netflix and unbundling of HBO, the vast majority of folks in the U.S. still are subscribers to cable, and there's a lot of power in there.
You use that word unbundling, and now we hear about skinny bundling. What does all that mean?
Right. So one of the more interesting things that happened this week as well was that Verizon, who's kind of a newcomer to this, right? Verizon, known mostly as a telco, a telecom company and a mobile company, has for a long time been in the Fios business, or providing television channels in competition with cable companies. And they made a big move in not having these gigantic packages of 200 channels at once, but giving you a base level of maybe a few dozen channels, then allowing you to create or to subscribe to packs, which are very thin, untraditional packs of maybe a half dozen to a dozen sports channels or different types of entertainment programming. And this has gotten a lot of folks in the traditional cable industry and the networks very concerned about
that. So, David, would that mean that customers can really choose exactly what they want, or is it a prepackaged deal?
No, Diane, I think you've actually hit on something really important. You know, the term of art that the providers use and that advocates use is a la carte, where you can say, you know, I want the Home and Gardens network, I want ESPN2, and I want the Disney Channel, and that's all I want. That's called a la carte. That's not happening. This is kind of, I guess you'd think of it as a la part, where you have a certain modest amount of a number of channels, and then you get to pick and choose. Do you want sports, in which case you could pay for just ESPN and Fox Sports 1, a new channel? Do you want just financial channels? Do you want, you know, certain elements of kinds of genres of packaging, an entertainment premium channel and the like? There are a couple things to point out about this, one of which is that as people add elements, the cost will creep up very quickly to be the average cost of $90 a month. Think about that. The average cable package for an American subscriber is about $1,000 a year. So they've already got a significant chunk of change, and Verizon's sort of toe in the water on this gets you there. The second thing, which I think is really important, is that the content providers, or what we think of as the channels, the people who own these channels, the networks, they're not happy about this in the least. One of the reasons why ESPN is so important to Disney is that it makes a ton of money. The cable providers have to pay Disney, the owner of ESPN, more for carrying ESPN than any other channel in the company. But it also gives Disney extraordinary leverage to carry other Disney properties like ABC Family or the new Fusion Channel. And that the unbundling of that without financial agreements with the companies is going to create great fractures in the industry.
Cecilia, how do you see it?
Well, this is an exciting year in many ways. It's sort of the year of streaming TV, sort of a tipping point in that some of the most valuable, really the most reluctant channels behind the cable package are now going online with their own streaming services that aren't attached to the cable subscription model. That said, just like David said, there are lots of caveats as to how wonderful this is potentially for consumers. This is all disaggregated in the sense that a lot of exclusive programming is behind particular streaming services. So if you're a fan of House of Cards, you have to have Netflix. If you're a fan of Game of Thrones, you still have to have HBO. If you're a fan of Transparent, you have to have, Amazon. If you watch the NFL, you have to watch CBS and ESPN. So adding those all together really could add up.
Could add up to
more
a lot
than potentially
of
cable.
Money. All right. Short break here and your calls, your comments when we come back. Stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Vicky and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. From the Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Art, seeking to increase Americans' understanding of Muslim cultures through the arts. More information is available at ddfia.org. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working together to build a culture of health for all. On the web at rwjf.org.
Welcome back. We're talking about all the changes going on in cable television. Lots of folks streaming directly, sort of going around Comcast, going around their providers. We'd like to know how your cable habits have changed over the past year or so. You can take our poll at drshow.org, and we'll share some of that feedback later in the hour. We've already got some feedback here on our Facebook page from Sadie. She says, I dropped Comcast and bought an HD antenna instead for a small one-time charge of $30. I get free basic HD TV, 26 channels, including 3 shopping channels I don't watch. But hey, it's free. Who needs cable? Not me. What do you think of that, David Folkenflik?
Well, I think that people who make that decision or people who decide not to shell out for cable will often themselves not really think of the fact that when they sign up for Netflix, they're signing up for TV. You know, they will have something that is their entertainment provider, and it gives them movies, and it gives them videos, and it gives them sitcoms, and now it's providing original programming with House of Cards, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and others. And as Cecilia was saying, you know, Amazon is dipping its toe in, and I think it's going to get in a lot more in that way as well. And so there's a replacement going on, and they're very nervous people running networks at the moment.
I'll bet.
Because there are very few indispensable things. One of the things that you're finding is that the reason that HBO is willing to spend so much on the sumptuous and violent and fascinating drama Game of Thrones is that it becomes something everybody talks about, and people don't want to miss it. So HBO is now grudgingly being pulled into the over-the-top, as it's called, industry as well. They're offering an HBO Go kind of package. ESPN is doing the same thing after years of saying it would not, because sports is indispensable, and sporting events are the one things that you don't know how it's going to turn out if you watch it live. And so people feel like they have to see it in real time in a way that you don't displace and binge watch as you might in drama or sitcoms.
Here's another comment, this time from Barbara on Facebook, who says, we're leaving cable. We have internet and both Roku and Amazon Prime, streaming local channels. Who needs cable in their $125 a month bill for 185 channels we never watch and only 15 we do? Bye-bye. What do you think of that, Andrew?
Well, and speaking to what you saw before, there are a lot of very tech-savvy, high disposable income folks who are actually going back to that antenna-based television, because all they really want are HBO, a la carte, Netflix, and occasionally, as David said, watching sports on television and getting live programming, which you can get for free over the air with the old traditional television antenna. So it's really fascinating to see the mixing and matching people are doing with these technologies. And I think that, you know, more and more you're going to see going forward, each time you go to your provider of cable or your triple package, right, of internet, phone, and cable, if you tell them, you know what, I don't think I want television anymore, a lot of folks are experiencing that cable provider or Verizon coming back and saying, just keep the TV. You don't have to pay anything. Just say that you want to keep watching TV. That is a huge, huge turning point as well.
And
that they don't have to charge subscription fees for television. They just want to be able to say more people are watching these channels.
I see. Here is something from Megan in Texas. She says, the new Verizon program boils down to a publicity stunt. My husband and I watch very little TV on very few channels, but Verizon has assembled the bundles in such a way that we'd have to buy several bundles to get those few channels. The cost comes so close to what we pay for a current package, it's not worth the change given the number of channels we'd lose access to. True cherry-picking of stations would be a genuine improvement, but this is not, Cecilia.
That's an astute observation by your listener. It is these companies, the distributors, the cable and telecom companies, are constructing these new offerings in a way, in Verizon in particular, so that you don't take away from their bigger model of really, which continues to be bundling. And so that's why certain things, and the must-have, like David says, is sports. Live sports is huge, as well as HBO and some news. And to disaggregate them into different kind of packages, one can't help as a consumer to try to put these all together. I'd be really curious, Diane, to hear from the listener who said that she's going to cut cable, how old that person is, because what the networks are betting on with these new streaming services, what HBO, ESPN, all these new services
younger
are betting on,
people.
Younger people, yeah. Known as cord nevers, these people who have never subscribed to cable in the first place, but they really are at risk of eating away at their core revenue business, cannibalizing their cable business by getting people in the cable side to leave their cable subscriptions for the streaming services. And it's actually not as hard as that first listener who wrote in and talked about sort of having an HD antenna and maybe one other streaming service. that was an uncommon thing. It was sort of for those who are really ahead in technology, who are able to jerry-rig that kind of system. That's a very easy thing to do now. It's kind of mainstream, in fact.
So, David Folkenflik, what is Verizon trying to prove?
I think Verizon is trying, in a sense, as your listener suggested, trying to break through some of the noise and be recognized as a player. I think it's single digits in terms of the number of people in the country who get their television, get cable that way. It's not as nearly as big a player as some of these other companies that we have talked about and can talk about. But it wants to be seen as a forward-looking company and have that be part of its image, you know, as a time where, you know, it really was a telephone company. It's trying to figure out ways to establish a beachhead, not just in providing internet broadband service, but all, through its telephone lines, but also now through the television stuff. I've got to say that what it's really done is it stirred up a bit of a hornet's nest with not just ESPN and Disney, but with other networks that are quite angry about it. Ultimately, they're all rational actors, and they'll all figure out ways that they can monetize things or not. But it seems as though Verizon's got a bit ahead of where the language and its contracts would allow it to do it in terms of saying they can slice and dice how they offer these things to the consumers.
Andrew, what about Apple? What is Apple TV? When are we likely to see the new content package they're working on?
Well, you know, Apple's trying to be a big player in this as well, right? So the launch of the pure a la carte HBO Now started with Apple, right? So we're actually in the middle of an exclusivity month that Apple has in terms of being the sole partner with HBO so that people who want to just pay $14.99 a month and get HBO without having to subscribe to on cable do it through Apple right now. Moving forward, Apple would love to be part of this as well in terms of being the future of how people get their television. And I would not be surprised to see big moves by Apple. A lot of people have been looking to see if Apple will actually be a television maker. It's not likely to happen, but they really do want to be the center of the distribution and the programming.
Cecilia, you recently wrote a piece about Apple's entry into content streaming. Mm-hmm. Could they, in fact, become the next Comcast?
They could, in the sense that this fall they plan to offer a bundle of channels that are digital streaming that include the major networks as well as ESPN. That's very key, except for NBC, but the major broadcasters. And so for about $30 to $40, about 50 channels could be included in this. This was probably going to come around September at the earliest. When I say that they could be the next Comcast, they can, in the sense that that might be the most, if indeed the inclusion of channels are of the most premium channels and the most desired ones, including ESPN, and they now have HBO, they could attract the kind of mass of customers that Comcast and other big cable companies have, because they simply have in one place, which is not available now, the best things to watch. That said, or the most popular things to watch, that said, you still have Netflix, Amazon, and these other players who have exclusive content that may or may not be part of any sort of Apple universe going forward.
And what about Dish Network Sling TV?
Dish did something very interesting this year. They launched a streaming service called Sling TV, as you mentioned, for $20, about 19 channels, actually more than 19 channels, that include live sports from ESPN, ESPN2, CNN, Food Network, and several other channels, including AMC and the History Channel. There are no local broadcasters, so if you like Monday Night Football, you won't get it on Sling TV. But you may have enough to cobble together this and maybe one other streaming service to get enough of what you want. If you're a big sports fan, this could suffice. So Sling got into this business. It's a business created by Dish Network. And Dish Network, like Verizon with its skinny bundle, is really trying to figure out where can we stand in this new streaming universe as people leave satellite and telecom TV.
All right, let's open the phones, hear what listeners have to say. And don't forget, do take our poll at drshow.org. We'd like to know how your cable habits have changed over the last year or two. Let's first go to Jill in Peterborough, New Hampshire. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I see this as a problem between hardware and software, or conduit versus content. My personal situation is I have a home business, so I have a cable internet connection through Comcast. But if I want to do streaming TV, Comcast requires me as a resident to also buy another wire, essentially, for the cable TV. And so that sort of would double my my wiring cost instead of just paying for one, you know, one hard wire coming in that provides me internet, phone, and TV. I don't mind paying more because it gives me a high speed line for my business, but to actually double the price because I want to get TV too. So I am shut out right now from getting any streaming service over my internet.
That's interesting. David Folkenflik.
Well, I think one of the things that's provided an opportunity for rivals to step in and give some kind of, shall we say, popular impetus to make federal officials and regulators wary of just sort of rubber stamping the idea of Comcast's ability to absorb Time Warner Cable is that Comcast ranks consistently at the bottom or at the very bottom of customer service rankings done annually. It's been a few months since I've checked, but not only did Comcast come in the worst in the industry, Comcast came in worst in corporate America being measured. And Time Warner Cable is just a rank or two above. So you're talking about some companies that have, although they've got some, I'm sure, among its many tens of thousands of employees, some very decent, hardworking people and smart and sharp folks, some of whom do some very admirable things for various communities across the country. Nonetheless, you've got this enormous conglomerate controlling all these different elements of the technical infrastructure of the country as well as the entertainment content. And people are just often feel reviled and loathed by the customer service that they receive from it. So that's what your caller is experiencing there.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Is that primarily because of cost, or is it restrictions, or what is it that puts Comcast so deeply at the bottom?
I think it's a history of bad customer experience, and it's really, there's some really egregious examples that sort of have exploded over social media and that people know about customers' experiences with the company. This actually gets back to your first question, Diane, about the merger and some of the things that people are trying to consider here in Washington as they think about whether Comcast and Time Warner Cable, the first and second biggest broadband internet providers, should be allowed to join, given its bad track record, but also because Comcast has become such a diversified, complicated business with its purchase of NBC Universal in 2011. So it's what you call vertically integrated in that it has new businesses stacked on top of its traditional cable TV business, and it's also now it's trying to grow horizontally in becoming a bigger cable internet business. And one of the things that we do know that regulators are trying to figure out is, has Comcast in any way used its ownership of media content to disadvantage other competitors on any side, in the content business or the distribution side? And one thing that they actually are looking into is Comcast's promise when it did merge with NBC Universal that it would remain a silent partner in the ownership of Hulu, which it owns along with Walt Disney Company, 21st Century Fox. And there is right now a review as to whether Comcast actually tried to influence its media partners into not selling Hulu.
Oh my.
And the question is, so this raises all these questions of how does this really, this converged company, a telecom, media, and technology company, how can we trust that as they grow bigger, they won't do anything else to take advantage of their size and influence?
Let's go to Jane in Indianapolis. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to make a point based on personal experience. Our cable bill with Comcast was up to $262. They just kept rising the price. So we did do my husband likes to watch Game of Thrones. We did go to Sling TV. We did cut out all our premier channels on Comcast. Our cable bill with them now is currently a little over $100 because we did some serious price negotiation, which gave us the room to search out other services. It does take some
doing. I gather it took you a lot of doing.
No, it didn't really. I just basically, as soon as I found out that Sling TV was out there, for basically, I believe it's $20 a month, and then if you add, I could be wrong about the price, and then if you add HBO, it's an extra $15 a month. Here's the thing. Consumers really need to decide what the shows are they want to watch. We didn't care about having Showtime. We didn't care about having the other premium channels. We just sat down and said, how much time do we have? What shows are important to us? It was HBO. For me, it was Property Brothers, which is also on Sling TV. With some shows, especially with HBO, you can go back and choose to watch things like documentaries, which
all
I just watched one last night.
We are going to have to stop you right there. Very interesting comment. We'll talk more about that when we come back after a short break.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees to choose from, offered 100% online, with 6 start dates a year. Learn more at online.asu.edu. From Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And from the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a conversation with best-selling author Jon Krakauer on his latest book of nonfiction. The author of Into the Wild and Into Thin Air chronicles the stories of women involved in several controversial rape cases at the University of Montana. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And welcome back. Here is our poll thus far. 63% of you say you no longer subscribe to cable. That's quite a number. And among those who cut cable, 68% subscribe to online streaming services instead. 45% of you would consider paying for cable if you could choose your own channels, but 38% say it would still come down to price. And price is clearly key. You can still take that poll at drshow.org, and we will post the full results on this tomorrow. Here's a tweet from Chris, who says, I also worry that streaming a la carte will end up being more expensive than cable, when you add up broadband plus individual streams. What do you think?
Well, that's certainly one of the arguments that you hear from people at places like Comcast and at places like Time Warner Cable. They say, look, we have arrangements that work. It's working for consumers who can get basic. They can get larger packages. You know, by bundling things together, yes, the average person probably samples maybe 17 of the 100, however many, 200, however many channels he or she has access to. But we can't afford to provide those 17 at a reasonable cost if you don't do it this way. It's interesting because you think about the cable nevers, the people who might just stream Netflix or Amazon Prime or something like that. But there's also a large group of people who are either, you know, most Americans are extremely busy. They've got their own lives to lead. They can't read up everything and every technical, you know, how to hack something through Wired magazine, how to do, you know, so they're not focused on that. Or other people are just scared of technology. If you think about the company that Time Warner Cable used to belong to, the larger Time Warner AOL conglomerate that was the worst corporate merger of all time, all history in America, bar none, you know, if you look at AOL, a majority of its revenue came from people who were still paying basically for the dial-up subscriber service that gave them an AOL email account. Now, it is a waste of money. It is just sending a check to AOL's bottom line for no reason. And AOL has made it extremely difficult to figure out how to get out of that. Mm-hmm. But most people don't know that. Most people haven't read up on it, and they're living full lives or they're afraid of their technology. I think similarly, cable providers are hoping, even as they really are becoming broadband providers, cable providers are hoping very much that it's too complicated, it's too tricky to both negotiate cable packages as though they are somehow your health care or your retirement packages, and also to just go to the trouble to actually make it happen.
What about Roku and how it competes with Apple, Cecilia?
So Roku is a device that gives you streaming internet TV as well, and Apple TV essentially has the same function. Roku's become tremendously successful. It is a place where people... It's a device that people use so they can get Netflix on their regular internet-enabled TV, and Apple TV is in the same business as well. These are all ways to get to that next level of making your streaming experience as close to your cable TV experience as possible in terms of how it looks and how it feels and how easy it is. One thing that we should keep in mind, as David was saying, is that convenience is a huge value for people. And as of now, people actually aren't replacing as much their cable service for streaming services. Streaming services have become mainstream in that 4 out of 10 households today have some sort of subscription streaming service. Most of those are subscriptions to Netflix. But what we're finding is that people are adding streaming services to cable. Cable subscriptions have been on the wane. They've been declining, but slowly, remarkably slow, compared to one would think that over all these years and the talk about cord cutting that it would have really happened. But this year, again, is sort of a tipping point now that ESPN, HBO, so many channels, even Nickelodeon has its own app, CBS and Showtime, everyone is putting their programs online. This will be a real test to see if there's a shift, if there is a replacement.
All right, to Ed in Rockford, Illinois, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
I just to enjoy this conversation, I wanted to make the comment that I am so glad that I dropped Comcast. I got Comcast originally for the internet, but I found out I could get the internet very well now with what they call U-verse, AT&T U-verse. And I have an antenna I put up in my attic many years ago that I connected, and I get about 20 to 30 channels on that without using any cable television at all.
What do you think of that, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about choice, right? That's the one thing that Comcast hasn't had to see a lot of, which is competition. And when you have competition, people have better options and will find something that better suits them. And for a lot of markets, Comcast is the only choice that you have. And for that reason, it's as David said, that's why you see customer service and quality levels go down the hill, because they don't have to compete with anyone for those things.
All right, to Andrew in Bethesda, Maryland, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Hi, Diana. First time caller, long time listener. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you.
Thanks. So this goes to what you, you know, the guest said before. It's just that, you know, why is more attention not paid to the kind of anti-competitive practices that Verizon and Comcast as telco providers have engaged in, which, you know, mean there's only one service in one area that is often backed up by state, local, and municipal governments, which amounts to essentially regional monopolies in one area. And that's why they've really put themselves in this position where people are sick of it and they want to change. And they'll find a better price point with a streaming service and basic internet, which is what I've done. And I can take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. David.
Well, you're absolutely right that these are essentially companies, Comcast and its competitors, that are granted limited-term monopolies of a kind. I mean, Verizon, Fios provides some kind of competitor in some markets. You see some overlapping markets, but most of the time, it's a single entity is given the license by a regulator. When I was in Baltimore, you know, I've been in NPR more than a decade now, but when I was in Baltimore, one of the things you noticed was that you would see public officials and relatives of public officials somehow getting benefits from Comcast in the year or two before contracts were given. I remember a city council member had a part-time job or side job with Comcast in the year before Comcast was up for review its contract. I believe the wife of a congressman who later became governor, if I'm not mistaken, the wife of former Governor Bob Ehrlich had a job with Comcast before he became governor. And they sort of seed these relationships with people on both sides of the aisle, as well as giving significant financial contributions to candidates at all levels of government, local, state, and federal, in such a way to ensure a, shall we say, favorable terrain as they go in to say, hey, we're good citizens. And they do, you know, these community projects to create goodwill, and sometimes they execute them as promised and sometimes they don't. But, you know, they would say they spend a lot of care and effort on this. I would say they're tending closely to those relationships as they look for those contracts to come up from the local regulators.
I think it's important to remember that cable companies do not truly compete with some of these streaming services. In other words, Comcast does not truly compete with Netflix in the sense that most Americans have one or two providers that actually plug in those cables to your home. That's a very, very powerful position to be in. So if you are that provider of the actual conduit of the internet into somebody's home, you are in a totally different range in a totally different industry, really, than a Netflix or an Amazon Prime. In other words, these new streaming providers still rely on the people who provide the runways. And the runways are really important. And that goes back to your caller's sort of frustration and, you know, some of the other listeners who have talked about their frustration with Comcast and other providers, not just Comcast, let's be clear, is that there hasn't been a tradition of competition truly in the telecom and cable space for access to the internet.
So let me ask you this. I'll give you my own example. I live in a condo with about 250 units. Comcast is the basic provider to that condo building. Now, if I, as an individual owner within that condo, choose to disconnect from Comcast and go, say, to Verizon or go to my choices, what is that going to mean to, because I have combination, I have telephone, TV, and broadband. For my internet service. So what's that going to mean?
So from what I understand, I think it depends on what your building offers. If your building offers Fios and Comcast, then you can choose from the two. But this is one, actually the FCC has tried to take this up in the past, whether buildings, multi-unit dwellings, and the access and the options that they have should be considered. And you really are stuck when you move in with whoever the providers are that provide for your building.
And Fios is not there yet. So, you know, we're a long way from that, David.
Well, here in New York, people watch very closely to see how the asphalt is torn up on the streets in front of apartment buildings to see, okay, my goodness, is Verizon being added? Will that give us some leverage? But if your building has cut a deal to get a bit of a discount with Time Warner Cable, as my building has, as an owner, to say in the aggregate we'll be providing here, among other things, it provides less incentive for the building to lobby local officials to allow them to tear up the asphalt one more time, which, as you know, degrades the roads, and it's a pain in the neck. So there are these local pressures one way or another that vitiate against the idea of true competition.
Interesting. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Anuj, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just want to make a quick comment. I'm 25. I'm one of the younger generation, you know, that never really subscribed to any kind of cable service. And I found that, I mean, I'm pretty tech savvy, I guess, versus the average consumer. And I find that, I mean, if you're pretty smart about it, you can get it down to maybe $50, $60 a month for your basic needs. But now recently, I mean, it's just, I feel like the only real basic or only really reason to get cable now is just to watch live sports. What's it called? Netflix. You know, HBO Go has done a very good job of, you know, providing live TV pretty much the second after it's been broadcasted. Like Game of Thrones, the minute after it goes on the air, it's on HBO Go. And so, I mean, I feel like the real step forward would come from live sports being somehow provided through cheaper means besides through Comcast.
What do you think, Andrew?
Well, I think, as we talked about before, this is the breakpoint where the two big coveted parts of the big cable bundle have been split off in 2015. HBO a la carte, and ESPN now being available on Sling, but eventually later this year on Apple. That was huge. For ESPN to be split off on its own and not be bundled in and requiring all these other channels to be brought along with it is the big revelation in 2015. That's going to start to unbundle all these sports companies.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Cecilia Kang, how do you see this playing out? Are many consumers going to be like our 25-year-old listener and simply cut the cable cord?
I think you're going to definitely see much more movement to streaming, that's for sure. And, you know, it's interesting. I've tried most of the streaming services, and I thought to myself, no way would I watch Game of Thrones on my cell phone.
Exactly.
You know, it's
on
my tablet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it begs for a big TV, 64 inches. I'm watching it on my iPhone, and I'm loving it. And so it's really interesting. I'm not a millennial. So I do think that some of the service, the convenience and the price might surprise some consumers who are considering this. I think some of these free trials might hook in some people who are potentially reluctant. This will be the what motivates people to change is when they just cannot put up with the price anymore. I think price will be a big factor. So if the cable bundle continues to get more expensive, then that will be a thing. If broadband prices continue to get more expensive, you might actually see people think, well, maybe it doesn't make so much sense to do all streaming. You know, so there are lots of different factors coming into play. But I do think that I can't see in 10 years really any difference from a consumer's perspective. You won't see really any difference in the experience of watching TV online and how easy or hard it is compared to cable. So I think it's difficult to justify a cable business going forward in 10, 20 years.
Do you agree, Andrew?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I watch over 50% of the video that I watch now on a tablet and not on my HD screen in my living room because it's just there when I want it. I don't have to make an appointment to go to a particular room to watch this content. And if you look at what the caller said about 18 to 25-year-olds, they've started to decrease the number of hours they watch TV from 20 to 18 hours per week. The folks who are 65 and above have increased their TV watching to almost 50 hours a week. So you're seeing that the older demographic is watching more TV, but they're not going to be there forever. And the younger folks are not creating that habit of watching TV. They're actually going to individual streaming services, YouTube, and dipping into video here and there.
David, what's your thought about what's coming?
Well, look, you mentioned that you take a bundle at home through Comcast, and that's how you get not only your TV and broadband, but your telephone as well. I think Cecilia is exactly right that we're going to look at the distinctions the way we look at the distinction between a landline and digital telephone. On the whole, we don't really think that there's a difference, except when there's a glitch or a blackout, in which case the landline works and the digital telephone doesn't. I've got two small kids. After each was born, you know, I found myself watching late at night. I had subscribed to MLB, Major League Baseball. I'd watch Angels game from the West Coast up at late on my little tablet, and that wouldn't wake anybody up while I was rocking one of the kids. It's a fun way to do things. At the same time, you know, there will be implications with this unbundling. ESPN, those subscriber payments to Disney subsidizes a bunch of other channels that don't get as much. Same for Fox News. And as you see unbundling, you may see certain channels go by the wayside, which may not be a terrible thing, but it's certainly an implication of how it's playing out.
David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR and author of Murdoch's World, The Last of the Old Media Empires. Andrew Lee is professor of journalism at American University's School of Communication. He is the author of The Wikipedia Revolution. And Cecilia Kang, entertainment and technology reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you. And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Natalie Yurev-Lifker answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington, D.C. This is NPR.